Radio Prague News. The Prime Minister says tech firms will be able to cope with the current strength of the crown. The United States is interested in employing Czech companies to work on its missile defence system. And an international warrant has been issued for the arrest of František Procházka. Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek says Czech firms will be able to cope with the current strength of the crown. In an interview with Reuters, he said that the increase in the crown's value helped offset high energy prices and added that companies would be able to cope with a gradual rise in the Czech currency's value. He said that despite entrepreneurs' complaints, the trade balance was still positive and that the Czech Republic was still able to export even under worsened conditions. The crown reached an all-time high of 25.93 to the euro earlier this week. The currency has gained 5.8% against the euro since the beginning of the year. The United States is interested in employing Czech companies to work on its missile defence system, reported Hospodářské noviny on Wednesday. The Pentagon has voiced an interest in working with Czech firms in the fields of research and development, and industrial production in particular, the paper reports. Around 30 Czech firms and 20 research institutes are set to discuss plans with a US delegation in Prague next month. It's currently unclear how much these contracts could be worth. A delegation from the Pentagon is expected to finalise the contracts with the Czech Defence Ministry in February. The construction of a US anti-missile radar base will be negotiated at the same time. The White House is hoping to build the base in Brdy, central Bohemia. An international warrant has been issued for the arrest of František Procházka. He stands accused of the biggest cash robbery in the country's history, suspected of taking over half a billion Czech crowns, or around $31 million. Mr. Procházka was charged with theft in absentia last Thursday. He's been missing since the robbery occurred. The suspect was working as a security guard for the firm G4S, from which the sum was stolen. G4S have offered a 2 million crown reward to anyone who helps track down Mr. Procházka or any possible accomplices. Around 60 politicians and academics have launched a petition calling on the public not to pay the health fees that will be imposed as of January 2008. Patients have to pay for their healthcare under a government reform package approved in August. The opposition Social Democrats immediately filed a complaint against healthcare fees with the Constitutional Court. The new petition calls on Czech citizens not to pay the fees until the Constitutional Court rules on the matter. Signatories of the petition so far include a number of Social Democrat MPs, journalists, historians and writers. As of January next year, Czechs will pay 30 crowns each time they visit the doctor and 60 crowns for each day that they spend in hospital. A limit of 5,000 Czech crowns per year has been put on any individual spending on healthcare. Any amount over that will be reimbursed. Now a quick look at the weather. Temperatures will dip over the next couple of days, with the average temperature being somewhere between -3 and 1 degrees Celsius. Expect cloudy skies and the occasional snow shower. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I am Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, the Czech government cancels an arms contract worth more than $1 billion. A new exhibition on Václav Havel gets underway in the Czech capital. And Prague Mayor Pavel Bem releases a book about his conquest of Mount Everest. Then later in the program, we visit the town of Pardubice, in this week's Spotlight. All this coming up, so please stay tuned. The Czech Defence Minister Vlasta Parkanová said on Tuesday that the Czech government has decided to withdraw from a deal to buy armoured personnel carriers from an Austrian arms producer. It is not just any contract, but, at over $1 billion, one of the biggest in the history of the Czech army. Jan Richter reports.
One of the biggest deals in the history of the Czech army is over. At a closed meeting last week, the Czech government decided to pull out of a deal worth 20 billion crowns, or more than $1.1 billion, to buy 199 armoured personnel carriers from the Austrian manufacturer Steyr-Daimler-Puch, a part of the US-based General Dynamics Corporation. Andrei Čirtek is the spokesman for the Czech Defence Ministry.
The contract was cancelled due to the long delay, which would take, in ideal case, first half of the year 2008, and first 17 APCs should have been delivered to Czech Army until the end of November 2007.
Jan Vidim, the head of the Chamber of Deputies Defense Committee, said on Tuesday that besides being late and not having passed the test required by the Czech Ministry of Defense, the contract was faulty from the very start. He says the Czech Army needs different types of vehicles rather than just 200 eight-wheel Panther carriers.
I'm simply convinced that the Czech Army cannot make good use of these 199 carriers. What we need is six-wheelers, armored four-wheelers, and a number of different types of vehicles. Buying 199 eight-wheeled vehicles was wrong.
Defense Ministry spokesman Andrei Čirtek says that they will wait for the reaction of Steyr before taking any further steps. The Steyr-Daimler-Puch press office declined to comment on Wednesday in anticipation of a meeting with Czech Ministry of Defense officials. The Steyr-Daimler-Puch company won the contract in 2006, when Karel Kinl was the defense minister. At the time, his ministry was heavily criticized for concluding such a big deal, as it was obvious that Mr. Kinl would not remain in the post for long. Jan Vidim again.
I think that it was very bold to sign the contract after losing general elections. The minister acted on the opinion of the general staff of the Czech army, which put forth its demands. I believe that the ministry should have revised those demands. I'm really worried that the expensive APCs could end up in storage.
Spokesman Andrei Čirtek says the defense ministry does not expect that the Austrian arms producer will contest the government's decision in a court of arbitration.
The contract was between Ministry of Defense and Czech company. So we don't see, according to our legal expertise, that there is any possibility of international arbitration.
Andrei Čirtek ending that report by Jan Richter. Václav Havel probably has a higher profile at the moment than at any time since he stepped down as Czech president almost 5 years ago. His first play in two decades has been published in book form ahead of its planned stage premiere in spring, and this week has seen the opening of an exhibition entitled Václav Havel, Czech Myth, which is a kind of taster for a planned US presidential-style Václav Havel library. Ian Willoughby was at the opening of the new exhibition.
40 let jste v tento den slyšeli z úst mých předchůdců v různých obměnách totéž.
Václav Havel's first New Year's Day presidential TV address in 1990 plays on repeat at the new exhibition Václav Havel, Czech Myth, which has just opened at Hilgertova Cihelna on Prague's Malá Strana. It also features, among other things, a recreation of Mr. Havel's cottage and his desk and bookcases from the years he spent in the president's office at Prague Castle. The exhibition has been organized by the Václav Havel Library, an institution which currently exists mostly in the planning stages. The man himself explains where the idea came from.
Je to inspirováno americkými prezidentskými knihovnami.
It's inspired by American presidential libraries. They're a very interesting institution without parallel elsewhere. If we succeed in creating one here, we would be the first outside the US, although ours would be a lot more modest than those in the States.
One of the co-founders of the Havel Library is sociologist Miloslav Petrusek. He says another inspiration was the legacy of T.G. Masaryk, the first president of Czechoslovakia.
When Masaryk's tenure as president ended, he said, "Nothing will remain after me but my books and academic work." In my opinion, Václav Havel has contributed to the intellectual development of this society. The text he has donated to us document his thoughts and ideas, and everything, or the great majority, has been archived in the Václav Havel Library.
The 71-year-old former president, looking rather well, I must say, emphasized at the new exhibition's opening that it's by no means intended to be definitive.
It's more like a kind of trailer released out of curiosity to see how the public reacts. One day, when the library fully exists, it will operate in a number of spheres. It should be a research center, it should have an informative and educational aspect, and it should offer club activities and have a lively presence in public life.
The Václav Havel Library is currently negotiating the purchase of a permanent building of its own in the center of Prague, though it could be some years before it's actually open. In the meantime, the exhibition at Hilgertova Cihelna is worth a visit.
Earlier this year, Prague Mayor Pavel became just the 10th Czech in history to conquer Mount Everest, at 8,848 meters, the world's highest peak. Mr. Bem, an experienced alpinist, set his sights on the mountain despite criticism at home for taking leave of absence. But he didn't allow himself to be deterred, and ultimately he succeeded. On the 18th of May, he and two Sherpas, who were part of a six-man team, reached the summit. The moment and many others from the journey resulted in a 27-minute film, as well as coffee table book released by Bem and fellow climber Rudolf Schwarzicek. Jan Wellinger was at the Prague launch on Tuesday.
It didn't take long for individual snippets of Pavel Bem's new documentary, Window to the Sky, to make it onto YouTube. But that shouldn't be altogether surprising when you have excellent digital footage from the top of the world. It would be a shame not to use it. Two trailers at the site offer footage from Mr. Bem's May expedition, including a beautiful morning scene from the very top of Mount Everest.
You arrive here. Summit. Pavel.
Summit. Nádherný místo. Možná nejkrásnější místo planety. Vratotřina, ale stálo to za to.
The film is just one component of a lavish book and gift package released by Mr. Bem and fellow climber Rudolf Schwarzicek this week. Along with the film, the package features a coffee table book full of photographs and other documentation, as well as added surprises, an extensive map of the mountain, and even copies of prayer flags. I spoke to Pavel Bem and asked him how, after months since his climb, he now saw his experience.
Day by day, I'm just waking up in the morning and I'm reminding of some of these beautiful views and panoramas which I've seen from the summit, which I guess is somehow unique. I was present at the birth of a new day in a central Himalaya. It was like a miracle for me.
The mayor admits that climbing Everest was a journey not with one, but many different layers of meaning.
We knew that the mountain has its own spirituality, and we knew that it's not only the climbing experience. It's not only the lifestyle of local people, the nomads, Sherpas, but it's also a question of the mystery, which is linked to the historical attempts to climb the Mount Everest and to touch the highest points of the planet, and we knew that.
Sadly, only 2 months after the successful ascent, Nima, one of the Sherpas who reached the peak with Pavel Bem, died on K2. Mr. Bem's book has been dedicated to the Sherpa's memory.
What has happened? One of our Sherpas 2 months later tried to ascend the second highest peak of the planet, K2 in Pakistan, and He died at the height of 8,000 meters. He fell down with the stone avalanche, and it was like an avalanche in my mind. And I decided to make a documentary film from our successful ascent. And then I decided with Rudolf Švařiček to write a book which is dedicated to this wonderful man who was almost 35 years old and who had two kids and a pregnant wife, and with whom we spent so much time, and we shared so many personal and intimate experiences.
The book, entitled Třetí Everest, The Third Everest, complete with Mr. Bam's film, goes on sale in Prague on Wednesday, and the mayor will be attending a series of upcoming signings and events throughout the Czech Republic. For now, there are only plans for the book to be released in Czech.
You are listening to Radio Prague, coming your way from the Czech Republic here in Central Europe. Just ahead, this week's Spotlight with Colleen O'Connor.
I'm standing on the picturesque square of Pernštinovo náměstí, in the centre of Pardubice, about an hour away from Prague in East Bohemia, which is where this edition of Spotlight comes from. The pretty Renaissance buildings on Pernštinovo náměstí and the impressive chateau nearby give an indication of this town's long and rich history, which saw it evolve from a prosperous hamlet in the Middle Ages to an industrial powerhouse by the start of the 20th century. The first historical reference to Pardubice dates back to 1295, and the original settlement was officially declared a town in 1340. Pardubice began to flourish as an urban centre in the region when it was taken over by the Pernštín noble family at the end of the 15th century. They turned the town's original castle into the opulent chateau that still stands to this day. They also rebuilt the town on a large scale, first in a late Gothic and then in an early Renaissance style. Many of the buildings erected at the time are still in existence, and it's easy to see why "to sparkle like Pardubice" was a popular saying at the time, when you see the imposing grandeur of these old municipal houses. The town suffered a lot during the 30 Years' War and was nearly razed to the ground during an attack by Swedish troops in 1645. It took a long time for Pardubice to get over this setback, and it only really began to come into its own again with the advent of the railway in the late 19th century. David Kopitz is head of external relations for Pardubice City Hall.
The railway has been and still is important, as it connects the capital of Prague with the south, with Moravia. And since Pardubice has been one of the key routes or key transport knots, this could be a reason for many investors to come here and for the industry to keep developing. It also allowed a greater involvement of the population. So with higher population, you have more workers and more speedy economic development.
After the arrival of the railroad, Pardubice quickly became known as something of a manufacturing powerhouse by the early 20th century. It was to remain a centre of industry right throughout the socialist era, particularly as a centre of chemical and engineering production. Unlike many other places that were hubs of state enterprise under socialism, the technical nature of Pardubice's staple industries meant that its highly skilled workforce were able to successfully adjust to the economic transformation that occurred after 1989. David Kopitz again.
Pardubice is still today an industrial city, even though the industries have been restructured in the 90s. Initially, it was particularly chemical industry, and later on, it was also heavy engineering, as a very common industry in the socialist times. And now, in the 90s, we have been focusing on newly on electronics through a Taiwanese company, Foxconn, one of the largest manufacturers of computer components in the world. And the second industry that begins to dominate in Pardubice is subcontracting for the automobile area, automobile manufacturers. Those are the new modern industries. Nonetheless, the chemical and partially engineering still persists.
One of the most famous, or rather notorious, products manufactured in Pardubice is the plastic explosive Semtex, which was the weapon of choice for many terrorist organizations in the 1970s and 80s because of the fact that it was so hard for security screening equipment to detect it. Semtex is still produced here, but thankfully its manufacturers now make sure to tag all exports so they can be picked up by X-ray machines. It's safe to assume, however, that most natives of Pardubice are more proud of their town's other extremely famous export. The tradition of making gingerbread in Pardubice dates back to the 16th century, when a special guild of gingerbread bakers was established in the town. Over the years, they refined and improved recipes to such an extent that the town became synonymous with this confection. Pardubice gingerbread is now even in the process of being granted a special geographical trademark by the European Union. According to David Coppitz, there are still a number of gingerbread companies in Pardubice to this day, and the consumption of gingerbread is very much part of life in the town.
There are generally two kinds of gingerbread. One would be decorated gingerbread that can be eaten, but mostly it's kept on the shelf as a souvenir, because those are quite art pieces, I would say. And the second kind would be gingerbread for eating, that's just nicely wrapped. And with this kind, we also have a tradition that after ice hockey game, if the team wins, spectators throw this kind of gingerbread on the ice. The gingerbread is collected and taken to a local school for handicapped. So this would be another tradition linked to gingerbread.
Ice hockey is actually very much part of the fabric of Pardubice, and the town boasts a very proud hockey tradition. The local team is one of the top outfits in the Czech National League and has produced many excellent players, including NHL stars Michal Sikora and legendary goaltender Dominik Hasek. Nevertheless, ice hockey is far from the only sport associated with Pardubice. Velká Pardubická steeplechase, which is sometimes known as the Czech Grand National. This event has been held in Pardubice since as far back as 1874, and it has developed a reputation as one of the most grueling and challenging steeplechases in the world. It has long occupied an important place on the continental racing calendar, and as many as 30,000 people from all over Europe descend on the town for the annual Velká Pardubická race meeting. According to David Coppitz, this race meeting is just one of the many delights Pardubice has to offer visitors.
All the visitors should not come just to see the city itself, but rather the happening inside the city. Sports is definitely something to see. If not Velká Pardubická, then possibly the Golden Helmet, famous speedway racing, or one of the hockey games or basketball games. Everything is on a very top of the national leagues. From the historical monuments, we like to present the castle as a pride of the city. And as you also have seen, the historic Penštinské square is worth mentioning. Now it's been almost fully reconstructed, renovated, and I believe it is admired by most of the tourists.
The quality of the amenities in and around Pardubice is one of the reasons why the town is considered by many to be one of the most attractive places to live in the Czech Republic. In fact, earlier this year, a Czech daily newspaper conducted an exhaustive survey of locations in the Czech Republic and declared Pardubice to be the best place to reside in this country. It's a conclusion that does not surprise David Coppitz.
Pardubice is becoming also a very modern city with new developments, new housing. There is a very low unemployment rate. It's now below 5% in the region and below 4% in Pardubice itself. There is a good access to jobs. There is fairly good access to this cultural and sporting life. There is also some nature sites around Pardubice. We can go biking, skating, lots of possibilities for free time adventures. There is also the university that offers very decent education, belongs to top 10 in Czech. So plenty of attractions, and I could understand that Pardubice, with the size of about 90,000 inhabitants, would become one of the best places to live in the Czech Republic.
And that edition of Spotlight with Colleen O'Connor has brought us to the end of today's program here on Radio Prague. Everything you have heard in this show can also be found online at radio.cz. Our website also includes an extensive archive of reports and features in text and audio form. And you can also sign up for a free news email and use our podcasting. Do let us know if you have anything to say about anything you have heard in this program. We also welcome any questions you may have, so don't hesitate to get in contact. The postal address is Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2. The address for emails is english@radio.cz. But that's all for now. From myself, Ruth Franíková, goodbye and take care.